The annual Cherry Blossoms Spectacle brings thousands of people from all over the world to Washington, D.C. during the springtime. But if you happen to live in Howard County, Maryland, you don't have to make that trip to enjoy this wonderful gift from Mother Nature.
And the objective was to make this a place that people either coming from the north or the south passing through Columbia would stop and see cherry blossoms on the way to or back from D.C. Over those 13 years, we've planted, more than 2,000 plus trees?
Probably 2,200 trees at least.
Now that the weather is warmer, I know many of us will be spending more time out in our gardens. This year, as you work on making your garden beautiful, I want to challenge you to also make it more humane.
So a humane gardener thinks about their landscape from the perspective of other species, both plants and animals, and what do they need? Not just what do humans want to have, not just our aesthetic desires, but what kind of food, shelter, cover from predators do animals need?
One of my favorite things about Howard County is how diverse and welcoming it is. And with diverse people comes a plethora of issues and opinions that need to be addressed. PATH is a nonprofit organization that looks to serve all.
And what it is made up of organizations and institutions around the county that are things like churches, mosques, synagogues, teachers' unions, and they coalesce around a common interest or a common issues that need to be addressed in Howard County.
These stories coming up in today's HOKA Journal, starting right now. Hi, and welcome to HOKA Journal, the show where we highlight the unique and interesting people, businesses, and events happening right here in Howard County. I am your host, Chris Oviedo. The beauty of spring in Maryland is absolutely undeniable. I am originally from Ecuador, which is a beautiful country in South America that has lots of natural resources, but it does not have four seasons. We don't have the leaves fall in October or the bare trees in December. And I have to admit, before setting foot in this country almost 17 years ago, I had no idea what we're missing out back home. I feel that there's something unique and almost magical about enjoying the transitions from summer to fall to winter and to now spring. And how wonderful, how wonderful it is to see how trees that appeared dead just a couple days ago suddenly come back to life and bloom with flowers of all sorts of colors and shapes and sizes. It's and honestly, one of my favorite trees is the cherry blossoms, which we are very lucky to have a good number of them around Howard County. But these trees not only are beautiful, they also are meaningful. Alex Baker tells us more about how the cherry blossoms have become a symbol of hope.
For HOKA Journal, I'm Alex Baker. We are now in the final days of winter, which means that we are ready to ring in the spring season. With spring comes the cherry blossoms, which also brings Blossoms of Hope, a program that strives to improve the lives of those with cancer and other needs. With me here today are two members of Blossoms of Hope, Joe Barbera and Vera Simmons. Joe, Vera, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alex. Great to be here.
Thank you.
So first question I'll just start off with is just give us a little bit of a brief description about what Blossoms of Hope is.
I can tell you a little bit about the history of Blossoms. It started about 13 years ago. It was funded initially by then county exec Jim Roby. Jim was looking for a way to beautify the county and to also try to make a connection to the Cherry Blossom Festival in D.C. And the objective was to make this a place that people either coming from the north or the south passing through Columbia would stop and see cherry blossoms on the way to or back from D.C. Over those 13 years, we've planted more than 2,000 plus trees.
Probably 2,200 trees at least.
In some of the groves around the area. Can you describe a little bit about where they are and where people might be able to go and see them this spring?
Sure. The best place that we've had the trees the longest is probably Centennial Lake. We've got trees along the street and along the boat ramps. There are trees like Kinemikwandu. There are trees all over the county in different parks throughout the county.
And the objective of having trees and having blossoms and blossoming every spring was not only to beautify, but also for people who were involved or had cancer, or were fighting cancer, or were survivors from families that had cancers, to be able to remember them and to have a way to remember on a regular basis that. And so what blossoms really, the core of blossoms began with beautifying the county, and then we had to find a charity to support. And back then it was the Claudia Mayer Center, and now it's Claudia Mayer Tina Broccolino Cancer Resource Center. And now that whole objective of that center is to support families that have cancer, and people have bought trees in honor and memory, and they've also done trees for survivors. And so it's become an integral part of the county with the trees and with the support we've given to that center over the years.
We offer what's called tree huggers. It's a plaque that's placed on the tree, and you can say in honor of or in memory of. And so you can purchase this, and the tree will always be a reminder or a memory of your loved one.
Okay. And so when you're, you know, operating, is it more, you operate more around spring and summertime?
Well, we're year-round, but our busy season starts with, obviously, the spring and the blossoms.
And then in the wintertime, is it more of just planning and preparing for the big spring and summer seasons?
Well, just again, kind of pick up on the history. Blossoms was part of Howard County Tourism, and that's why then County Exec Jim Roby provided the funding for it. Several years ago, about 5+ years ago, Blossoms of Hope was taken out of tourism, and we became a standalone 501c3. So as a charity, we have the ability to be able to take the funds that we raise from events and other ways and support the community. So providing funds to the Resource Center. 2 years ago with a flood in Ellicott City, we provided about $8,000 to Ellicott City Partnership to support people who were looking for jobs, needed money to rebuild and to get started. So we're really a community organization. And even though we have a lot of events in the spring, we are a 365 real 501c3 charity.
Okay. And so looking at your website, you already have a bunch of events coming up. So why don't you start talking about those? One of the things I noticed first off is the Cherrybration kickoff. So start
right.
with that.
Right. We kick off our Cherrybration season on the 28th of March. It's a happy hour networking event, and we also offer tours. It is in the medical pavilion over at the hospital, and we offer tours of the Claudia Mayer Tina Broccolino Cancer Resource Center, also a chance to get to know Blossoms of Hope's folks and network with some of our supporters. And that's, again, on March 28th.
And that's something that we're really happy to provide food and drink and just to get people together in the community to meet and to take a chance to go through the center. And we invite people to join us as well as to have people go through the center and see what kind of amazing support they give to cancer victims and their families.
Okay. And then the next one I noticed on the list was the Clark's Iliac Cherrybration Days.
That's a fun weekend for the kids. It's April 7th and 8th, both days of the weekend. If the children will wear dresses, dress up as princesses, or wear pink, they get to get free hay rides. So that's a fun thing. And then Blossoms of Hope supplies crafts for the kids to do as well. So there's a lot of baby goats being born around then, so it's a lot of fun that weekend.
And also, we're also getting support from Centennial, from their National Honor Society?
Yes, good point. National Honor Society of Centennial High School will be there as volunteers as well.
All right. And then I guess we'll go down the order. And then the next one is 11th Annual Pretty in Pink Ladies Champagne Luncheon and Fashion Show.
Yes, that's on April 13th, and that's actually hosted by Turf Valley. It's a great fashion show. It starts out at 10 o'clock with vendors from all around the county and state providing, you know, people can go and shop. And then we have a luncheon at 1 and then a fashion show, which is a lot of cancer survivors and families of cancer survivors from 2 to 3. So it's a really neat event.
It's a lot of fun. There's also a few guys there, so that's good too. Besides the 400-plus women, there are a few of us there. The other part that's really fun about this is that over the years, the last couple of years, last year we had Yumi Ogun The governor, or 2 years ago, we had Yumi Hogan, the governor's wife there.
Oh, wow.
In support of his fight with cancer, and she was one of the models. And then last year, we had the Japanese ambassador's wife. Because we've continued to keep and establish a relationship with Washington, D.C. and the Japanese ambassador, and we share the cherry blossoms, and we also share three of the original seedlings from the plantings that were made at the in D.C. We've established that relationship, and we try to keep that going with the folks in D.C.
And then the next one on the list is the Blossoms of Hope Annual Theme Exhibition Reception.
So this is put on by the Columbia Association, and it's in the Art Center in Columbia. The reception is on Friday, April 13th from 6 to 8, and that's when they award the prizes to all the artists and the authors. But the art show itself goes on from April 13th through May the 6th, and I would check it out. They have some really creative and neat things each year.
It's a lot of fun, and we are really thankful that they support us, and they provide us with a donation for being involved with that. It's amazing, and every year it's different.
And then the next one is the 10th Annual Pink Greens Golf Classic.
This one's great. It's on April 27th. It starts in the morning. It's a shotgun start. They provide breakfast. They provide lunch. There's some fun holes, some fun competitions, and, of course, some prizes at the end.
Yeah, it's we always hope and pray for good weather. Because that part of April, you never know what's going to happen. But this year, I've been told it's going to be a beautiful day.
That's good. Definitely good to hear. And the next one is the Hills of Milltown 5K.
Now, this one is on May the 13th. It's Mother's Day. It's at 8 a.m. in the morning, so it's a great way to get your kids up and running and active first thing in the morning. We are there cheering on. We're at the very top. It's a very hilly course. And we're at the very top at the Patapsco Institute cheering everybody on. Blossoms of Hope is.
And that's through the Ellicott City Partnership. And again, they support us and they make a donation to Blossoms for our involvement in their event.
Okay. And then the last one on the list is the 7th Annual Power of the Purse.
Now, this one is a lot of fun. We collect purses throughout the year, and we have a purse sale of gently used or new purses. It's Monday, June 11th. From 4:30 to 7:30, and we have a VIP ticket where you pay a little bit more, but you get first dibs at all the purses, which a lot of women love, and that's at 3:30 in the afternoon. There's silent auction goodies. There's all kinds of fun things there.
It's amazing. It's one of our biggest events. Mm-hmm. Again, that always sells out. You have 400 women having a great time. We have folks that donate the food and the drink, and we also have some silent auctions and ways for people to support the community, and it's one of those events where people put it on their calendar the very next day after the event ends and are pretty psyched about it. And there are a few guys there as well.
There's always some guys around.
Exactly. Well, somebody's got to really help out and make certain there's security there for all these wonderful purses and all these great.
So I run down all these lists of events coming up. Now, is there any that that you have, like, say, in the process of doing, or are there any that haven't shown up on your website yet?
Actually, yes, we do. We have, in the midst of starting what's called Brackets for Good, it is like the March Madness for nonprofits.
Okay.
And it begins on March the 9th, and we compete against another nonprofit within Maryland. We are the only Howard County nonprofit in this competition, so we're pretty excited about that. So it's like March Madness, where the most points would win. Everybody can donate, everybody can chip in, but every dollar is a point. So obviously the objective is to move from one round to the next and have the most points or dollars each round.
And what's great about this is being the only charity in Howard County to make the final cut for this in the state of Maryland is a terrific opportunity for folks to become familiar with what Blossoms of Hope does. It is on our website. People can make contributions, and it's not, you know, a lot of money. There's a lot of people that can make small donations to be part of this and to help us win. And if we win, it's a $10,000 prize, and that would be something that would be very neat to be the Howard County charity and to win the state of Maryland. Just as almost as exciting as having Maryland win the NCAAs. Almost, but not quite.
Of course, this year it might not happen. But
yeah, I think you're right.
And, you know, we see all these organizations. So when you do a lot of these events, do you collaborate with other organizations around Howard County?
If you think about how these events work, we do receive the support from sponsors. So we have a list of sponsors that provide us with annual donations that are attributable to many of the different events. The folks at Turf Valley, for example, are very supportive of us. We have our monthly meetings there. The people on our board are affiliated with a lot of different organizations. Real estate, Howard Hughes, Harry Witzke Funeral Home. I mean, you go down the list of the folks that are involved in our community. So we have a very strong and active board of directors, people that really care, they get involved. And we continue to work as an organization since we are relatively new, standing on our own the last 5 years. We just hired an executive director, part-time executive director, Melissa Clem, and Melissa's going to help us get the word out to more organizations. So the answer is it's continuing to be a work in progress. We do collaborate with a lot of organizations, Ellicott City Partnership, and there's a lot of ideas for other things we can do to fill in the rest of the year. A fall event for men, you know, guys can get together.
Women will be there too.
And there will be a couple women there, yes. But we continue to look at ways to do this because it's more than just supporting one charity. It's really providing support to the community at large, and finding out the organizations that might have some needs is something that we're always open to.
And with all these events, I can imagine that there are a lot of ways people can contribute. So I know you have a lot of volunteer opportunities?
Yes. And we were just talking about that today before we came in. We have Power of the Purse is a big opportunity for volunteers. The golf tournament, people can play in it. They can volunteer. And Vera can give you more details about how many people go into making Power of the Purse, for example, such a successful event.
Power of the Purse, we have people doing everything, like I said, for cleaning the purses and pricing the purses. We have people doing the silent auction. We have 60, 70 people doing, and then the day of the event, there's a lot of people involved with organizing, shuffling purses, making sure things run smoothly.
And if someone is interested in volunteering or learning more about opportunities to help us out, they can contact us through the website. There's a phone number, an email address, and Vera is very diligent in getting back to people.
So I was curious, you know, since we're here at Howard Community College, for these opportunities, are there ways for students can contribute to Blossoms of Hope?
Definitely. Volunteer, they can, like Joe was saying, they can get on the website and find our email address or phone number and call and say, I'm interested in volunteering. Our events are great because they're a wide variety of things. I mean, there's the running, there's the purses, there's the golf. So there's many ways and many interests for people to get involved.
Right, and the fact that students are looking at ways to support the community and learn more about ways to do that outside of just, you know, going to school and working. We do have a lot of young people that get involved, and we certainly would love to have more folks, more students from Howard Community College involved in supporting us by volunteering or making a donation or telling their families about what we do as well.
All right. So if you could put you on a little bit on the spot here, is if you could narrow it down to one thing, both of you, what is the one thing you really enjoy most about Blossoms of Hope?
The people that you work with. They're a great group of people.
Yeah, and I say this all the time and whenever I have a chance. This is a board of people that really care, that are connected to the community, that wish to give back. We have fun together. We have just added a few new board members that are going to be terrific additions to provide a little bit more, some other additional ideas and energy. This is not a board that you get on and you do nothing. This is a board where you get involved. You're passionate, and it's really an honor to be the chair of the board of a group of people. We have our monthly meetings. We have a lot of fun during those meetings. We like to be together. We like to work together, and we throw great parties. But our biggest challenge is not just throwing events, because events take a lot of energy and effort. So in order for us to be able to continue to support our community, we're looking to do more things, individual contributions, corporate contributions. We recently had something happen that was very cool. Howard Hughes is in the process of beautifying the Meriwether District and downtown area, and they bought 100 trees from us, and we planted those trees just at the beginning of the fall, right?
Right, October 31st.
October 31st, right? Halloween.
That's right.
And those trees are going to be blossoming in the center of town, and we'll show people, and will hopefully be a destination for people to come and see how beautiful it is and how it blossoms every spring. So organizations like that give us a lot of energy. They support the community, and we help to meet the needs of the folks that we support as well.
Okay, and then last question I'll have is, you talked a little bit already, but just tell us where the ways listeners can go to learn more about Blossoms of Hope.
Our website is www.blossomsofhope.org. We have a Facebook page as well, so either of those have all our contact information, and you'll find a lot of information there.
And we also have a mailing list if somebody's interested in getting our monthly newsletter. We send that out. And again, we try to keep people informed. Vera's very good at keeping that website and the Facebook page updated with relevant information. So I really would love to see people liking Blossoms of Hope and becoming involved in one way or another to help us support the community.
You know, there's also, I just remembered that there's YouTube. We have a channel.
Oh, okay.
And we have a great video about Blossoms and why people have gotten involved and how it's helped people, including in the center. So that would be something to definitely check out. I think about a 7-minute video is a great video.
That's a good point. And if somebody's really interested in finding out what we do, you're going to hear it from the people we support. And it's moving. It's amazing video, and I defy anybody not to have a few tears in their eyes after seeing it.
Okay. All right. Joe, Vera, I want to thank both of you again for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Alex. We appreciate it.
For HOCO Journal, I'm Alex Baker. I'll be right back on Dragon Digital Radio.
If you're struggling to pay the mortgage, Making Home Affordable is a free government resource that can make it easier. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Howard County Journal. Matt Trudell with you, and welcoming into the studio today, I have a special guest. I guess, are you known as the Humane Gardener?
Yes.
So it is the Humane Gardener, Nancy Lawson. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. I guess, how'd you get into gardening?
I got into gardening in my 20s when I had a little patio with a tiny little patch of soil in Baltimore in a townhouse that we rented. And I just thought it looked barren and I wanted to make it pretty. And I kind of grew up with nature. I grew up in Bowie.
Okay.
And my father carved gardens out of his whole front lawn.
Wow.
And so I got used to that. When we moved out to Sykesville, we had 2 acres of turf grass.
Okay.
And I could see right away that it was not really helpful to anybody, including me. I like to have lots of bright colors around and flowers. And eventually I realized that that wasn't enough either, that there are certain things you need to do to help other species as well. So that was the genesis of what I do now.
What does it mean to be a humane gardener?
So a humane gardener thinks about their landscape from the perspective of other species, both plants and animals. And what do they need? Not just what do humans want to have, not just our aesthetic desires, but what kind of food, shelter, cover from predators do animals need? And also, a humane gardener thinks about all of the species, not just the ones that are considered pretty, the bees, the birds, the butterflies, and understands that in order to have all of these creatures, you need to not be selectively compassionate. So care about not just the butterflies, but also the caterpillars that eat the leaves. And
okay.
Care about the groundhogs who till the soil for you and the moles who eat the invasive earthworms and the beetle larvae. And all of these things are a whole system.
And so sometimes we malign certain species based on sort of a fear that's induced by a lot of marketing ploys. We hear a lot from lawn care companies about having the perfect green lawn and that these animals are going to somehow mess them up. But once you start to really garden for all species, you realize that there's a balance that happens. Mm-hmm. And if you leave the voles, for example, and you don't worry so much about the mice, the red-shouldered hawks will come in and they have something to eat and keep those animals in check. So it's sort of about thinking more holistically about who's in your backyard and understanding that we need to plant for these animals and nurture habitat for these animals because there isn't going to be enough left for them in our increasingly developed world.
Yeah, I think most people, when you think about gardeners, for the most part nowadays, it's all about keeping everything out, you know, and there's special things that you can buy to keep the deer away and, you know,
exactly.
all that.
Exactly.
So you're welcoming them in, and that's what it means to be a humane gardener. All right. So what made you decide to write the book, The Humane Gardener?
So I wrote that book. I was asked actually by the publisher to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I had been thinking for a long time about some ideas that I was writing about in a column for the Humane Society of the United States. That's where they first saw what I was doing and asked me to expand it into a book. And the main reason that I felt there wasn't something out there that already filled this niche was that there are people who, like I said, garden for certain wildlife, and then they can't seem to humanely resolve conflicts with other wildlife. So this book talks about both welcoming them and then finding ways to coexist when there is a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people get angry with squirrels for eating their bird seed, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of putting out the feeders, then you can put out plants instead, because that's really what birds need. They need plants that attract insects that they can feed to their chicks. Chicks don't eat bird seed. They mainly eat caterpillars.
Okay.
And so you need native plants to support those caterpillars. Those are the plants they've evolved to digest. And so if you're putting out bird seed and you're getting mad at squirrels, then and you're trapping them. A lot of people trap squirrels, or they'll trap these other creatures. Then you're not really seeing, you know, the forest for the trees.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, like, if you set up a system where there's plenty for everybody, they leave what you want alone? Or
for the most part, I mean, you're always going to have, like, animals need plants, just like we need plants. You know, we need our spinach, and they need their nutrients that way too. But the more you have, the less pressure there's going to be on your cultivated plants. So, for example, we leave dandelions in the lawn. We don't use any pesticides.
Okay.
And we leave clover. And so that happens to be a delicacy for rabbits.
Mm.
They love dandelions. So I have a video I show in my presentation of a rabbit, like, pulling a dandelion stalk off at the bottom and sucking it in, seed head and all. And it's just, everybody loves it because it's just, it makes you see that rabbit in a different way. Like, yes, everybody has to eat, right?
Yeah.
And because we leave those things, the rabbits, sometimes they'll eat my asters and things that I planted in my meadow gardens and such, but there's a lot less pressure on those plants for animals to eat if you nurture things like this.
Well, I have a pet bunny rabbit, and
that's awesome.
Yeah, we went when we love our vet. When we took it to our vet, he took us outside and was like, "This is what they can eat. This is what they can't eat.
Really?
This is what you should look at." It was I thought it was awesome. I've never had that experience before, and they were like, you know, this is what you want. This is, and we always constantly do tons of research about different things that we can feed them. Dandelions is a good thing. It wasn't dandelion time of the season, so of the year, so they didn't say dandelions. But I'm gonna keep that in mind. So obviously, you wrote this book for people to learn the way, and I can understand why. I think, you know, I'll drive around with friends, and like a squirrel will hop out in front of a car and I'll brake for it. And they're like, why? They're in our area. I go, we built houses and streets on their land.
Yeah.
So I guess why do you think people should read the book and be more humane while gardening?
Right. Well, we don't have enough we're not going to have enough land left to support animals who are integral to our biodiversity and our ecosystems. And so the last refuge in some places is your front yard and your backyard. And not only for these sort of generalist species like the squirrels and the rabbits. And by the way, squirrels also, I like to point out to people, they plant trees. I mean, they plant a lot of trees.
Yep.
So if you let them do their work, you'll get a lot of free volunteer trees that people are going and spending $30, $40, $50 on at the nursery.
Yeah.
But also we have 4,000 native bee species in North America and hundreds here in Maryland, and most of them nest in the ground. And about 30% of them nest in twigs and stems and fallen logs and tree snags and these things that people tend to take away from their landscape. And these are really important pollinators. Mm-hmm. And people think, oh, I need to help the bees. I'm going to add a hive. Actually, what you need is to nurture habitat. And for so many of these little guys, or moms, I should say, what they need for their nest is a bare patch of soil. Mm-hmm. So just a bare patch with no grass, no mulch. We tend to put dense fertilized turf grass and smothering layers of mulch on everything. And that's not what a lot of these animals need. So right now we have something called a cellophane bee just emerging. And they like Virginia bluebells and some of these flowers that are coming out now. And they dig little nests that look like anthills. So mm-hmm. if you just leave some basically dirt, I guarantee you will start to see these ground nesting bees. They're solitary. They don't sting. They're gentle because they don't have a hive to defend.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are things that, you know, you can easily do with a really small patch of land, too, and make a big difference. Hummingbirds are coming through now. And if we don't have flowers for them, they might not get the nutrients that they need. And so this idea of thinking about what you could do even in a little space and how much those spaces can add up. I mean, imagine if, you know, even a quarter of the people in Howard County did this.
Yeah.
How much more wildscaping we would have for animals.
So you will be at Clarksville Commons on April 19th doing a presentation which is called Nurturing Garden Habitats for Wildlife.
Yes.
Is that going more into detail about what's in the book, or is it a separate presentation, talk?
It actually covers all the themes in the book.
Okay.
And so it's built around the idea that we're steeped in something that I call the framework of fear, which is the heavy marketing by pesticide and nuisance wildlife control industries. For us to think of a lot of our plants as weeds, to think of animals eating plants as damage, to think of leaves falling under trees, which are really important for so many insects and birds to forage mm-hmm. in there, and to think of that as messy. And then also to think of the animals themselves as either pests and nuisances or vicious and aggressive. And so I go through and show why, you know, these ideas are myths and mm-hmm. why they've trained us to essentially mow our landscapes down into almost nothing but turf grass monoculture, which is the number one irrigated crop in the United States.
Wow.
And not very helpful to people. So so I do that, and then I show examples of what happens when you stop doing that and when you start just letting things go and grow. And there are ways to do this both by planting and by nurturing what you already have.
Okay.
And so you can start with a patch and just let it go and see what comes up. That's what we did in our backyard.
Okay.
And you'll often get native grasses, native wildflowers, and sort of these things that are in the seed bank already. It may have been there for years, but they haven't had a chance to
bloom because yes. you're always mowing everything down.
And, exactly.
Okay. So I read online that I believe it's $5 to attend. Do you know if you have to sign up or pay at the door?
I believe you can do both.
Okay.
Yeah.
And okay.
We're having a dinner beforehand at Food Plenty, which is next door.
Okay.
In Clarksville Commons. I think there's still spaces left if anyone wants to come. It's just going to be a casual.
Okay.
Pay your own dinner way.
Okay. So I was on your website. I saw you do a bunch of these talks and kind of multi-states also. How often are you out talking? How often are you out presenting?
Well, I just got done with a run of 3 weeks in Oklahoma, Milwaukee, and Rutgers in New Jersey.
Okay.
And I'm about to start again and going up to Arnold Arboretum at Harvard and Penn and some colleges, which will be exciting
because awesome.
I want to talk to some young people. But so I have probably about 50 events this year, and it comes in waves. You know, gardeners tend to stop in June and July going to these things so they can be out in the garden.
And you know, the thing is, I think so with young people, what I've seen, and I'm older than kids that go here, but I went here, and what I've seen is you have kind of a split. You have a split of kids that just are all about technology. I don't need to worry about anything from the past times.
Right.
But then you have what I call like the vintage millennials, right? That are like,
right.
And I feel like there's a good amount out here that are interested in gardening and learning to do things that we used to do all the time in our past and didn't have technology. So do you find, is that, I guess that's one why you want to go to the colleges, but do you get a good turnout at the colleges?
I have not spoken to a specifically young audience yet. I am going to on Sunday at Monmouth University in New Jersey.
Okay.
But what I find is that, so a lot of times groups that will invite me will be master gardener groups and such.
Okay.
And so it's often older people, but there'll be somebody who's like a server at a banquet.
Yeah.
And will come up and say, I'm an environmental science major, and I haven't learned about any of this, and I really want to buy your book, and I'm so excited, and so I found that this is something that a lot of young people are interested in once they hear about it, but it still isn't something that people are exposed to at that age either.
Yeah.
And one thing that was really exciting too was I volunteer at Robinson Nature Center sometimes to help out in their meadows and pull invasives, and I talked to a couple volunteers over students from HCC, and you know, I think that's a great way for people to start learning. We spent the afternoon together pulling weeds and planting things, but otherwise I wouldn't have been exposed to that either at that age. Just you're focused on your career and
I mean there's a bunch of stuff going on, especially that you know. I've noticed there's a divide. You know, I've definitely seen tons of people that are just about technology. YouTube will tell me what to do. I don't need to learn this, you know. But then I've seen a bunch that are like, you know, maybe I should learn some car stuff, and maybe I should learn this, and maybe I should learn that.
So, that's great. Well, and we need both. We're going to need both going forward.
I agree.
Yeah. So,
do you have any plans on writing any more books, or are you just kind of haven't thought about it, letting this coast right now?
I do. I have about 5 different ideas.
Okay.
And I was recently asked by my publisher, when are you going to write another book? We want you to. I need to narrow it down. This particular book was sort of a summation of many years of thinking that bubbled up. And so I want to make sure the next one is similarly, you know, something that feels significant to me that I can actually make a tome out of.
Well, we will definitely have to have you back here when that happens.
Yeah.
Just 2 more questions. One, I guess, why do you think people should come to the talk? I know we've kind of covered this, but I guess summarize why you think, like, the main reason why they should come.
Yeah, I think that people often believe, I'm not a gardener, I'm not a green thumb, this doesn't apply to me. And what I found many audience members and participants come away with is that actually anyone can do this as long as you look to nature to kind of be your guide. And it's not nearly as difficult as manicured gardening or as people might think creating a landscape could be. And so I think people should come to get some ideas for even how to get started, and probably will find it inspirational to see examples from other people's gardens.
All right. And last, where can people find more information about you? Where can they purchase your book? All that good stuff.
Yeah, I have a website, humangardener.com, and I do put continuing content on there. And so there's also links to where they can buy the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can get it at a lot of bookstores.
Okay.
And I also am bringing copies to Clarksville Commons so people can buy signed copies there.
Okay.
And, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in. This was fascinating. I went over time, so it's going to be hard. This has been Nancy Lawson, the Humane Gardener, here on Howard County Journal. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
There's one thing you can never have sex without.
It's consent.
Because sex without it isn't sex.
It's rape.
It's on us to stop sexual assault.
Learn how and take the pledge at itsonus.org.
Opioids are highly addictive drugs, even when prescribed. If misused, they can lead to overdose and even death. One opioid overdose is too many. You have the power to save a life. If you or someone you know are misusing prescription opioids such as oxycodone or other forms of opioids like heroin or fentanyl, please call the Howard County Health Department for treatment options and opioid overdose response training at 410-313-6202 or visit the website at howardcountymd.gov/get help.
For HOCA Journal, I am Cris Oviedo, and today in studio with me, I have Amy Lamke, and she is a member of the strategy team at PATH. And PATH, if you don't know, stands for People Acting Together in Howard. So let's just dive right into it, and let's start with finding out, what is PATH?
PATH is a community organization in Howard County. And PATH stands for People Acting Together in Howard. It was formed about 12 years ago. And what it is made up of organizations and institutions around the county that are things like churches, mosques, synagogues, teachers' unions, and they coalesce around a common interest or a common issues that need to be addressed in Howard County, generally speaking, around issues of social justice. We have worked on issues in Annapolis at state level, on the DREAM Act. We addressed things locally that started as Howard County issues that, when working with elected officials, actually brought us to Annapolis. It was actually suggested with one campaign around affordable housing. That was how I became affiliated with PATH 10 years ago, took me to Annapolis. And we typically meet with elected officials when the issue requires us and to ask for some type of change in the system.
So let's talk a little more about how you became involved, because it almost sounds like by chance is how you got involved with PATH.
Well, PATH in itself is a grassroots organization. Mm-hmm. So ideas come forward basically out of house meetings and other one-on-one relational meetings, and then are brought to the forefront and voted on all together by all of the member institutions as whether or not they will go forward. So this actually happened with a campaign around affordable housing before I came on board. Hmm. This was sort of already in the works, the wheels were moving. And I saw a post for a meeting in my neighborhood. And I went to the meeting and I filled out a little card. And lo and behold, someone from PATH shows up just as I was getting ready to mow the lawn and says, hey, we've been speaking to some of your neighbors and some other people who live in manufactured housing in the county around the Columbia and Elkridge area, which is where I reside, and said, we're addressing some issues of fear that since you own the structure,
right,
your home, but you do not own the land that it sits on, you rent it, that some of these mobile home parks have been closing. People have suddenly found themselves homeless, lost all of their investment in their home, and that kind of thing. Would you be interested in getting involved to move toward some type of legislation that would protect your way of living? Mm-hmm. And at first I said, oh, no, I don't think that's for me. Then I went to a couple of more meetings, and I was convinced. The first meeting that I went to, the county executive was there, members of the county council. They had just wrapped up a campaign having to do with transportation and shortening wait times for the bus. And they got the county executive and people from his office to spend a day, a whole day out of their busy schedule riding around on Howard Transit, one bus to the next, standing at bus stops, waiting just like everybody else who needs to use it to get to work and school and other things. And I was so kind of impressed with their power, this organization that I had never heard of before, suddenly being recognized by elected officials and being able to do something,
right,
to actually not just observe, but actually implement change that shortened wait times to, I believe they're now under a half hour across the board. That impressed me. And so I worked with PATH for about a year and a half. It was not an easy process. It was two sessions of Annapolis, but eventually it did pass. Bills were reconciled on the last day of the session. And I stood proudly behind the governor as he signed it into law in May of 2010. And so now myself, as well as 70,000 people across the state of Maryland who live in mobile homes, are protected. They're offered some type of compensation that's tied to inflation. So it goes up every year. If the land that they change the use of it, it's turned into a mall, or it's redeveloped, or it's sold, and the new owner doesn't want to continue it being a mobile home community. So I think the calculations were somewhere in the vicinity of $20 million of insurance against homelessness.
Wow. Is PATH mainly a religious compound, or is it just that religious organizations are part of it, but can anybody join in?
Any institution, we are limited to our 501c requirements. So if Courtney Watson's campaign wanted to join, that would be a no-go. Mm-hmm. It is a nonpartisan. We are strictly nonpartisan. And whereas we have member institutions that practice one religion or another, we are not limited to, and none of our sister organizations are either. It's not a requirement to belong to a church in order to join PATH. Typically, religious institutions, part of their identity is a community of people. You know, they stand around after church or shul or worship services and talk about what keeps them up at night. So this is a way that we can get a beat on a large sector of the population within Howard County by having faith-based institutions. But PATH itself is, I wouldn't call it faith-based, but because so many of our members are, it just tends to go that way.
And before we talk about the initiatives that you currently guys have in hand, you also said something else that really struck a chord with me. You said people talk about what keeps them up at night.
Correct.
So in order for PATH to look at one of these issues or situations that maybe are keeping our residents up at night, what are the considerations for you guys to maybe start moving forward and start, you know, actively pursuing change in law or any other type of movement towards, like you said, one of the concerns that one of our residents might have?
Right. So when an issue comes up in PATH, it's always voted on. All of the agenda is voted on, and an issue might be heard repeated in different institutions that belong to PATH. One of them a while ago was youth unemployment. It was coming up again and again where it's summertime and my senior, you know, and or junior going into his senior year of high school can't find any work during the summer. My college student is graduated and back at home, you know, living in his old room and not working. So we, as a strategy team, we usually discuss these issues first and then bring them to decide whether or not we're going to bring them to a countywide action meeting where we have three to five, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less, representatives from each one of the institutions that belong to PATH come and vote on whether or not we will move forward with whatever it is as and go ahead and coalesce around it and decide that this is going to be a campaign and start working on next steps.
What are some of the active campaigns that you guys are pursuing right now?
One of them is in and around one particular mobile home park, the one that I live in, around safety and security issues. Recently, there have been a rash of home break-ins, and Baltimore Sun ran an article about the drug busts that were done in a couple of the homes there. And there was, unfortunately, speeding has been an issue in the park with no speed bumps, nothing to slow people down. Two children have been run over by speeding cars. One of them, unfortunately, lost his life, other one will most likely be addressing serious physical challenges for the rest of his life. We wanted to address this situation with the owner, but the owner was not responding to just residents' demands. So PATH offered to step in. A lot of the people who live in the mobile home park actually belong to some of the institutions. Similarly, like I said, the youth unemployment, which wound up turning into a clean jobs initiative, which the county still funds to this day, called Ready. The people who live in Deep Run spoke to their pastor, spoke to other church leaders, spoke to me, and that's how I became aware of things that were going on in the neighborhood. And then I, in turn, spoke to, since I sit on the strategy team, I brought it up with them, and PATH was more than happy to come to the rescue, I guess you would say, and work on this as one of the initiatives. One of the things that is a roadblock, more or less, is that there is a language barrier. There are many new Americans who are residing in Deep Run. Mm-hmm. It is the most affordable place to live in Howard County. And the problem is that while attempting to master the English language, it's very challenging. And so communicating with park management that only speaks in English, and there's no one there to represent, I want to say about 35% of the neighborhood of the 1,800 residents that live there are Hispanic. And English is their second language. And many struggle to communicate. They are now living in fear of their safety, of their children's safety, and feel very unsafe. And so we have, through PATH, we have gotten translators to show up to meetings and be able to translate with meetings with members of management to try and get some resolution to these issues, like security guard in the park, some speed bumps put down, and that kind of thing. So we are actively in the midst of that campaign moving forward. So,
are there any other campaigns that you guys are actively working on?
We are working on a Get Out the Vote, a nonpartisan. We are getting ready to embark on a Get Out the Vote campaign for the upcoming elections. And we have done We've done much work within the Howard County Public Schools. Mm-hmm. We successfully worked on the health policy, mm-hmm. And we worked with the HCEA and the school board to get funded the paraeducators who work in special education. Without having paraeducators to be able to be in the schools helping students who need extra work, the regular instructors, the teachers would be, their time would be taken away from the other students, and everybody's education basically would suffer.
How do you guys get funding?
Our membership pays dues. So each one of the member institutions pays us dues. And in addition, we are funded by grants that we apply for, Catholic Campaign for Human Development. We partnered with the Horizon Foundation on the healthy food in schools, the health and wellness policy. Now I remember it, at HCPSS, and so that's how we do take private donations as well. So if you go to PATH's website, you can click on the donate button. And so we have a Friends of PATH campaign going on right now that's raising a bit of extra money. We keep our expenses really, really low and tight so that there really aren't administrative or very few administrative costs.
Very good. And if people want to get involved, if they want to volunteer, if they have issues that they want to bring up, what's the best way that they can get in touch with you guys?
I would go to pathiaf.org and send a message through there. That would probably be the best way.
Is there anything else that you want to tell our listeners before we wrap our conversation up today?
I guess it's just that I never knew before I became involved with PATH that getting up and taking action and seeing where injustice is and doing something about it would feel so fulfilling. So I'm very, very grateful to PATH for helping me to identify that strength inside myself and also that sense of purpose.
So if there's issues that you would like to see change, if there's things that you feel that could be better, maybe PATH can become a partner in change for you. So reach out to them, talk to them, present your issues, and you could just, like Amy, become a, I guess, a justice worker, you know, a superhero justice worker in a sense. So, Amy, thank you for coming into our studio today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And for HOCO Journal, I'm Cris Oviedo, and we'll be right back.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
That's it for our show today. Thanks to Matt, Alex, and all our guests this month for bringing hope, for taking care of the environment, and for standing up for social justice in Howard County. We really appreciate you. And thank you for listening to our show. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. You can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are Dragon Digital Radio. And if you'd like to be part of our show or you have comments and ideas, don't forget to contact me at moviedo@howardcc.edu, or you can just find me on Facebook as Cris Oviedo. Howard County is truly a great place. Let's all do our part in keeping it that way. Until next month, I am Cris Oviedo.